Dark wings.
Dork words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 3, episode final.
Misa!
That doesn't sound like
Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, that guy.
Well, it's about 9:45 here on Sunday evening. Slipping into the throne zone. Put on my wolf pelt robe and luxuriate in the sweet, sultry sounds of
KXNB. I'm luxuriating.
You're soaking in it.
You sound good tonight.
Season 3. Wrap up.
It's a wrap.
I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week, as always, are
Greg McCallie,
Mike Hergert,
Phil Jonak.
We're becoming aware of our low-end selves, the low-end theory.
Why don't you tell the good people what kind of microphone you're using there, Greg?
Well, I'm using a Shure SM58, no switch. Good for live sound reinforcement. Not really much of a recording mic, but good for a live scenario such as this one.
I mean, tell me about the cardioid.
Tell me about your pattern.
Okay, well, this can make the cut, maybe.
Show me your bass response.
No.
Why so shy?
Listeners, we were having a technical discussion earlier, and well, you just get to enjoy the tail end of it.
They reaped the fruits of the discussion.
Who thinks Chuck sounds particularly silky tonight?
Raise your digital hands.
A show of posts. Hey. Westeros has moved forward rapidly over the course of the last couple episodes. Phil, it's good to have you back.
Of course, the one episode I missed is the one I wanted to say the penultimate episode in the intro, and I will never get that chance now.
What about next season?
He'll have a hockey game.
Next season we'll have a penultimate episode.
The Blackhawks will be in the playoffs again.
Am I invited back?
Well, you have to talk to Chuck.
To Chuck.
I don't do the hiring or firing.
Just the wiring.
Butt slap.
I get those pants back.
Well, I'm pretty happy with where they're leaving us in the lurch, so to speak, halfway through book three.
I don't see how they're going to get a whole another season out of what's left from this book for next season.
What's left on the docket for the characters that survive? Well, we could try to break it down, but that would be veering heavily into spoiler territory.
And silkily.
The Silk Spoiler. Is that your... That's Chuck's nickname.
Well, there's less characters to worry about now. I mean...
You think we'll see Gendry again?
Well...
They didn't save his life for nothing, but...
I kind of figured there's going to be an entire episode devoted to him castaway style.
I guess he's kind of taken the place of another character, so...
Let's talk about some castaways.
Boy, was I wrong about Melisandre's intentions with him, huh? A couple episodes ago, I was like, oh, I don't think she's... Well, now that she said that, I don't think she's really going to hurt him.
Melisandre really turned on a dime there as soon as...
The Lord of Light commanded it.
Once you drop a note in a flame...
You'll never go back.
I mean, I guess she really... Presumably, she saw something that changed her mind... But, I don't know, did it kind of seem like she was kind of going with the flow, too? Or, well, I mean...
Did she have her own agenda, or did she believe what she said, that question?
I think she believed it.
She had that look, that foreshadowing look at the end. The last look I think we saw of her looking at Davos.
She was very...
She wasn't
big,
happy about what she
down.
Had to do.
There were a few looks this episode that got cast.
I just am a little surprised at her... Lord of Light can't help out as much as a Raven's Note can. They didn't know about any of this yet.
It's It's pretty... I thought people pretty much ignored anything the Night's Watch ever said. Did you get that impression?
If she had had the opportunity to roast Gendry whole, she would have seen the whole the big picture, probably. That's what she might tell you.
Fuck a couple of leeches, man. Let's get this guy on the spit.
Yeah.
She'll see it all.
But if he can just regenerate his blood, and he's a forever source if you keep him alive, right?
That's true, too, I think.
Presumably.
Like Davos, I'm not super knowledgeable about the black arts.
The Lord of Light commands a sacrifice.
Or am I?
But
I learned that dragons are magic tonight.
Well, they seem magic.
Are they puffs of magic dragons? It didn't work.
Try again.
No.
It does seem like they could follow up with Davos. Season 4, Episode 1, rowing that boat, hitting the shore, having an adventure.
Gendry,
what did I say? Davos, damn it. It does seem like...
The Ribald Adventures of Gendry and Podrick Payne, a couple episodes.
Is that your fanfic for the summer?
Oh, God.
It is now.
Or it also seems like Gendry could just drop off the face of the earth. And just show up like a season or three later. I mean, we'll see him again for sure, because otherwise what's the point of letting him live?
He has some importance.
And I think we all would expect to see Rickon and Osha again, right?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Maybe not next season, though. I don't know.
Maybe not next season. Now we know. Last week, who was it that was saying that Rob seemed to have an awful lot of... stamina left, even though he had a back full of crossbow bolts.
I said it. I said that. Me. Craig.
Craig McCallie.
It's just a stark characteristic, as we see John manage the cross-country ride with three arrows in his back and leg.
If there's one thing the Starks can do right, it's get shot and live. Well, for a minute.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if Rob wouldn't have got stabbed in the heart, he probably would have lived.
You know, they did, for showing that John got shot three times, they didn't do any suspension, or they didn't do anything to make you think he was going to die. They could have done more. They could have had him almost die.
I mean, he looked in bad shape, right, when he showed up.
Well, do you
he
think,
was hunched over.
I don't think anyone has any question about whether he's going to live. Everyone's like, oh... Get him.
You're home.
You're home. Yeah, you're home.
You did it.
That's not even a fucking spoiler.
You did it. We'll see you in season 4.
That's just my anger at them not writing more danger into the situation.
More danger.
I don't know if he lives. I haven't read these books.
That was kind of John's most
forgotten all the books.
Pathetic moment, saying, I have to go home.
God, it was terrible.
Reminded me of Forrest Gump for some reason.
Doesn't he know that kind of pitiful delivery is not going to make a wildling not shoot you? She's just like, she was probably like, I was, this is my boyfriend is a pussy. I'm so embarrassed.
I love you. You love me, but I got to go home. Sorry, Jenny.
Yeah. Come on, John.
That's how you say I love you. North, but south of the wall. Couple arrows.
Oh,
sorry. I spoiled your writing party. Egret.
I've seen that movie.
We got 100 egrets.
Well, should we talk about the elephant in the room? The
Stampy?
The Bolton Snow in the room?
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Now we can talk about it. It's not a spoiler anymore. We can...
Even though we did talk about it when it was... Semi-spoiled.
Oh, did we? I thought we were playing dumb, like, oh, who's this guy?
I know. I wonder what affiliation the guy who's flaying men has.
You didn't really put...
With flaying
I
men?
I didn't put that fine a point on it.
I think you were putting us on last or 2 weeks ago, whatever, where you're like, hey, did you notice that the thing that they have Theon on looks a lot like the sigil of House...
Yeah, Bolton? That's right. I didn't come right out and say it.
Yeah. I mean, clearly this guy was Ramsay...
Ramsay Snow.
We got that was interesting. Bruce Bolton spelled it out for us in a little banter with Walder
Frey.
But I still don't appreciate those 4 episodes of no plot advancement.
You don't appreciate
for the viewer that hasn't read the books. You know, it still was stagnant.
In the books, we got to avoid most of the torture and just come in when Theon was completely Reekified, when his mm-hmm. transformation into Reek was complete.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little graphic, but I don't know. I'm okay with it, I guess. I mean, I didn't enjoy the things they did to Theon. And maybe this is kind of a thing, too. Like I keep saying, you know, I'm reading into it, since the books aren't done, from George R. R. Martin's point of view, which are the characters that are deserving of more screen time because of what their ultimate fate will be in the books. And I have to think, you know, even though Martin will surprise you with a red wedding here and there, that he has a heroic redemption in store for Theon of some kind.
You mean in the books eventually?
Well, adapted to the
right.
screen.
But yes. I mean something that even the people who are caught up on the books haven't gotten. Something that hasn't been written yet, you mean?
Well,
yes.
I guess that's right. Yeah. I guess if it had been written, then I wouldn't be saying this because I would feel like it was a spoiler.
Don't talk down to me.
But then again, I guess I'm also, I mean, it just...
You're spoiling it because now people know it doesn't happen yet.
I guess now people might assume that Theon will live.
Let's scrap this whole episode and start over.
It's 9:58 on a Sunday and spoilers are flying.
Not really, though.
And my wolf pelt robe is slipping.
Butt slap, number 2. Turn the Other Cheek, the sequel.
Let's watch it and podcast about it.
Walder Frey has some...
choice words about his victory.
Some soapboxing. He finally got somewhere.
He's awesome. The guy, the actor who plays him, he's really fucking good.
Yes.
You said that last week, and we saw it more today.
How about the nice segue that they gave before they switched to the scene with Walder Frey?
Yep. You talk about a man who invites you into his home and gives you his salt and bread and then just stabs your womb 600 times.
Well, the gods don't like that, evidently.
So we hear...
I was wondering where they were going with the Rat King story. I couldn't quite remember the details of it, but I was like, really? What is it about the Rat King that made it...
It didn't
worthy?
Go anywhere fast. Bran is also not the best engaging storyteller I've ever seen.
He's still coming into his own.
Thank goodness he can warg.
Bran might be my least favorite actor on the show. And it's not entirely his fault, but he's growing up.
He's caught in a weird
too
place.
Fast, and
yeah,
and he hasn't really given enough to do to, I don't know. I hope he's workshopping with someone from the Stella Adler School or something. Between seasons. Hone his chops. Well, then again,
maybe you should email him.
If he's just going to be skinwalking in all manner of beasts from here on out, I guess it doesn't really matter.
That's the ultimate acting.
Ouch.
It was a high five.
Dick slap.
Sword play. So, the TV's on a certain spot right now. The Hound and Arya just kind of waltz out of there, you know, when the shit's looking not so great.
Yeah, well...
I'll grab a banner. Nobody will know.
Well, it was a banner. It was like, look, it's a Frey banner, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. Banner that happened to have didn't have like a perfectly sharpened spearhead on the end of it. Like, let's just leave this laying around. What could go right? I said last week that the Hound never can really catch a break and everything he tries to do ends up getting screwed up, but... He also has stumbled out of a few places that most people wouldn't be able to wiggle out of without much fanfare, whether it's...
Sneaking out of King's Landing?
Yeah, whether it's King's Landing or this... I mean, there's no particular reason anybody should have decided to let him just do what he wants. So,
well, he's badass enough to walk off of a battlefield, to kill anybody that might give him some trouble.
Yeah.
But if his single-minded purpose is to leave the battlefield, he's got a better chance than some of getting out of there, I guess.
And we get the whole prancing of a dead Rob, beheaded Rob with the wolf's head attached to him.
That was pretty something.
Yes.
Arya gets to take it all in and
then get her revenge.
Get a little more bitterness than she already has.
Not just her brother either, but a reminder of her wolf as well. Wolf? Yeah, her wolf.
Her wolf that escaped. Is still alive.
But it's, it's a reminder.
But hasn't been mentioned.
So how many?
She doesn't know it's still alive.
There's three wolves still.
She doesn't know what a wolf is.
Kind of in play. John's, and then Brand's and Rickon's, right?
I thought Ghost was going to come out of nowhere and take an arrow for the team.
Where is Ghost?
He's kind of...
North or south of the wall?
I think north, presumably.
Well, that's fucked up.
He's the pet of some White Walker now.
Oh, don't say that.
He's a zombie wolf.
Zombies are hot right now.
They are.
I was disappointed with the Night Fort, what did Sam call it? Like a Sally Port or something? Like whatever the secret...
Right.
Sally Forth.
Secret. They just kind of walk through the gate.
Sally Worth?
None of this. None of it.
It was just a tunnel with a light on the end of it. It didn't seem very hidden or secret. I mean, there's a really neat thing that happens in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of there's like a secret passage with like a magic code word.
You have to talk like the Night's Watch code that he has to speak to it.
You have to say the Elvish word for friend. That's not true.
There is no Elvish word for friend.
What?
That's not true either.
You have to say the...
Like the Night's Watch oath.
That's right. And you have to be a member of the Night's Watch and say the oath to trigger the magic that opens like the hidden door.
And you have to get past a fingerprint reader and a retina scan. That's not true.
No. No, it's not. Because if that were true, then a white could get through. Of a former... Brother.
They have a database.
But it would be the literal same fingerprint and retina.
But they can just check inactive, and then he can't.
But I don't think the dead brother can't probably speak the oath.
Well, do they also have, like, vitals?
Click. Come on in.
Bad Foley work here.
Good bassy Foley work.
Rich, silky. There was a significant character missing from that exchange of Sam and Gilly and baby.
Some guy.
Coming south.
Some guy. Yep.
A character who...
A real character.
He's a real character who I believe has been written out of the show. But he was barely, I don't know, there's the mysterious figure that helps Sam get away from the others, and I don't know if we'll ever learn anything about that character. Mm.
So sorry, everyone.
Neither will you. Read the book.
King's Landing. So we might be wondering how their marriage is going. And we get one sense that there's some hope that they could be friends and have playful banter and actually like one another.
They're friendly.
And then that all goes to shit.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit too bad. It's sad and poignant and fine. What about Joffrey's delight? His disgusting delight?
He's really happy.
And his petulant...
He pisses off everybody in the room.
He does.
The gravity really hit when Joffrey accused Tywin of staying at Casterly Rock when things heated up. I think I had only gone a couple times in that scene, and then when that happened, I went...
Joffrey's just too dumb and too mean to live.
He's too... Well, dare I say passionate? Or he can't govern his passions? And it will be his undoing.
Well, Tyrion made a... pretty serious threat.
He made a real threat. Joffrey made a real threat that he shouldn't have made, maybe.
Tyrion made a real threat.
Oh,
about Joffrey.
Oh, see, I was talking about Joffrey's pseudo threat to Tywin. But yeah, go on.
Well, he didn't make a threat so much as a bald-faced
a threat
accusation.
Begets a threat.
But that to Tywin, I think, is a threat.
Oh, he said the one thing. Yeah, I mean, you can't say shit about Tywin.
That's when the strings come in.
But Tywin won't do anything against his own family except be a tyrant and a douche.
What did you think that...
But he wouldn't do anything to prevent a member of his family from living or losing power or position.
He will put them to bed.
Without supper. What did we take away from Tywin and Tyrion's one-on-one exchange when he said, I wanted to throw you in the sea, but I didn't? Was Tyrion conflicted? Was he solely horrified? Or was he touched that his dad didn't throw him in the sea?
He wasn't touched.
No.
I don't think he was hearing anything that he didn't already know. But it did sort of, even though Tyrion seemed to be the only one that appreciated the genius of Tywin's machinations, you know, lest we think that they're bonding over their co-brilliant appreciation of strategy and manipulating people, Tywin also said, well, if you weren't a Lannister, I would have
killed you
as a baby, because
probably Tywin had to do a lot more underhanded shit when Aerys was king, including having him killed.
Right.
Regicide.
Didn't Tywin sort of quit as the Hand?
I believe so.
He was like the only Hand of the Mad King who survived, because he
just quit and escaped and
went
back to
Casterly Rock. Yeah, he quit and escaped before he could be executed. And then he just laid low until after the Battle of the Trident. Well, you know, Joffrey told us all about it. Jamie told us all about it in the hot tub a couple weeks ago.
We catch up with Stumpy just for a moment.
Yeah.
Just for a flash of screen time.
We don't really get that whole scene. I wanted more to happen there. You know, if you're going to show Jamie and Cersei reunited, show us more than sort of a...
Wasn't the point...
A concerned glance.
You wanted to see some incest?
Well, that's what happens when they're reunited in the books.
In the Sept, nonetheless.
On a coffin, nonetheless.
Yeah. There's a dead body.
Y'all should read the books, you know what I'm saying? Hey.
With the candlestick.
In the Sept.
Oh. Ooh. Yeah.
Hey, Game of Thrones clue variant.
It's coming. Game of Thrones clue variant is coming.
Is that going to be before or after winter?
Maybe at the same time? I don't know.
I think a Christmas release is probably...
Fourth quarter.
The way to go, yeah.
Black Friday.
So wasn't the point of the scene that Cersei looked very... If you remember the last time they saw each other, she was kind of like, get away from me. Fuck off. I don't want to talk to you. She was pretty dismissive of him, and now he's been gone for so long, and she seemed really to have that look of like... You're back. Like, conflicted longing.
Then they both glance at the Hand.
Yeah, he looks down in shame. He's ashamed. He hasn't been super ashamed around anyone else with it. You know, he joked about it at first, but when he sees her, he just looks down like, sorry about this.
I think in the book, they both just surrender to unbridled
passion,
sort of just sad.
I mean, they're like
fumbling.
They knock stuff
humiliating
off,
passion.
Candles off the wherever they're placed, and you know, get it done.
Yeah,
and that's how King's Landing burns down in the books. Not really.
And we do kind of get when he first shows up when he first arrives back in King's Landing. It's like the guy with the cart. Get out of the way, you
country boy.
Country boy.
Brienne gives him that pitying glance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh.
No one recognizes you anymore.
Not much of a homecoming for you, is it, buddy?
No one knows he's coming, though, I guess.
Well, I'm sure we'll see a lot more of that in the next episode of what Jaime does in King's Landing. How, you know, he has to meet with Tywin. And he is a member of the King's Guard. he's been AWOL for a long time. I think they've been holding this spot open.
But they didn't know about the...
The hand.
Well,
desk job.
He lost his writing hand. Writing. His 10-key hand.
Any loose threads? Any are there any characters we care about that we don't know their fate between now and next season?
We haven't talked about anything that happened across the narrow sea yet.
That's our big sweeping epic
ending
season ending shot.
Well, that was theirs.
How about the Arion Hound? You know, they riding through the forest. A little revenge time comes upon us.
How about that? Callback. Arya's repeated impaling of a Frey man.
He's telling the story about how they, you know, that wolf head was pretty damn hard to get on that body.
The hound is amenable. He's not upset. He lets her do her thing. Slays the other three guys, sits down for a nice kebab.
And then she picks up the old coin that...
The coin and whispers Valor Margulis three times and clicks her heels together.
And then the Candyman comes out.
In Kansas.
Everything went wrong.
That was Arya's most cold-blooded moment, really, so far, right?
She was even conniving about it. Who else do we know?
Who else is still alive? Well, so... Everybody up.
I try to get Shay out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Shay became... I still don't really know what they're trying to accomplish with Shay's character anymore.
It's fractured.
Shay is... She either... So, apparently, Shay is truly in love with Tyrion.
Well, Varys says that. Is that... That can mean a lot of things. Are the writers trying to tell us Shay is actually in love with him? Are they trying to say that Varys thinks she's in love with them?
Did everything Varys say, was he instructed to say any of those things by Tyrion?
I mean, I don't think so.
That was her reading of it. She basically assumed that Tyrion had sent Varys to do his dirty work to get rid of her. Which maybe he did, but we didn't see that.
I don't know if it was implied that she thought that.
At the end, she says if he wants me to leave, he can...
He'll say so.
I think she's just being a girl. I mean, you can't say that.
But, okay.
Well, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah. Well, see, I think maybe that's why some of our lady listeners might have taken umbrage at my constant Shay hating. But, you know, that's because she's just not the character she was in the book. It's not that I hate the Shay as portrayed on the show. You know, I think there's some things that the character of Shay needs to do, and I don't think the way that they're painting her as sort of this noble... you know, sort of spurned, heartbroken girlfriend character doesn't quite gel with kind of the more mercenary prostitute character that she was in the book.
It is fractured nobility. I mean, she's... Fuck. I mean, can't she take the diamonds and demand that Tyrion tell her to her face if he wants her to go? Because she kind of does what she wants anyway, so why not? I don't know if she's making...
And apparently she loves and would kill for Sansa now?
Yeah, that's... Yeah. This is tricky.
I don't know. She's such a wild card now. Whatever she does is not going to have anything to do with the way I'm expecting it to. Or, you know, readers would have expected it to.
I looked over and you were excited. I saw the look in your eyes as Varys was making his pitch.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Take the bait. You can go.
Take the diamond.
Give me the diamonds.
I want the diamonds.
Give me the diamonds.
My least favorite scene this week is Cersei, you know, misty-eyed remembrances of baby Joffrey.
Oof.
Yeah.
I mean, she wanders in there, tells Podrick to leave, comes in like she has a mission, and then she just kind of shoots the emotional shit with Tyrion. Aren't there other people that she, or other things she could be doing rather than...
Very good point. She usually doesn't talk to Tyrion unless she's trying to accomplish something.
Right. And they trade barbs.
All she does is just show up and sort of commiserate with him.
She has wine with him, yeah. Which I guess isn't saying much around this part of the
She couldn't be. This is like Cersei at her saddest and loneliest.
Why would she go to Tyrion with that? Come on.
Right.
Yep.
So things are different.
Pod gets another nod from the ladies.
The ladies in waiting have even heard.
Everybody knows.
I don't know.
Now Tyrion's just trying to turn him into a drunk so he isn't able to perform.
I forgot. We missed the whole Balon Greyjoy gets a certain letter from Ramsay and, you know.
Yara.
I was going to say Asha. But
it's another character shift.
Yeah.
Yara's motivations are drastically different.
A drastic shift. The writers are making it seem like she has seen the show through our eyes and seen all the terribleness that's happened, and suddenly she's now worried about baby brother when she almost damned him earlier in front of everyone, you know?
Right. I mean, she was in a position to sort of save him from himself when he was in Winterfell, and she turned her back on him then. Maybe she's guilty. She feels guilty. I don't know. It's strange, but I guess it's just kind of like a good sort of streamlined hurry up and explain why Yara and a bunch of
Ironborn
are going to be heading back up north on a mission.
Would that fly after he made his decision, you know? And then she's like, well, I made my decision, and I'm going to take your men. And
when she took the ship and the men, I mean, doesn't
take your best men.
Balon have really the final say? Wouldn't he have been like, no, you're not taking anybody anywhere?
You don't understand. My decision trumps your decision, so...
I mean, I don't think an admiral of the Navy can go to the President of the United States and be like, listen, I'm taking the ships, whether you want it or not.
Well, when you expressly don't want it.
Right, when you definitely don't want it, so that's happening. Maybe his own disregard for his family was supposed to hold a mirror to her face, along the lines of the guilt that you were talking about, Chuck.
Now you're becoming a late-blooming philosopher.
They're the worst.
God, everything in the show that ever makes me laugh is said by Tyrion. That's not true, but mostly.
Tyrion is a funny guy. Looking.
So rescue's coming for Reek, you know. It'll only take a couple months. I'm sure nothing bad will happen to him in that time.
What else?
Well, they're keeping him alive. Ramsay's really just delighted with Reek. And, I mean, you know, all those scenes, they do a lot to establish Ramsay, who is going to play a more important role in times to come, I think.
I mean, didn't they really only establish his psychosis? They didn't talk about anything about his background or his true real motivation, anything. They just showed you he's fucking crazy.
Right.
He'll do anything. There's nothing that's too far.
Yeah.
He'll kill his own guys to...
Yeah.
To fuck with Theon's head.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Extreme!
Now do that with more bass.
Get closer to the mic.
Extreme.
I don't know. Everything I can think of to say...
Will spoil something?
Well, it kind of. Yeah. It's just I'm kind of fast forwarding to I wonder what's going to happen next season and or you know imagining how what I already know is going to happen is going to play out show style but I you know so it was I liked this season. I like what they did. I think I've gotten used to the rhythms of the show and
the biorhythms.
One thing I liked about this episode is it reminded me that feeling of the sort of epic battle to come. Like the, you know, characters in Westeros, enough characters in Westeros now have a healthy fear of the White Walkers. And it's exciting when you think of, now that we know that R'hllor, the
Red God.
The Red God. It has real power, and now that Melisandre is turning, and Stannis, who is kind of her chosen champion for R'hllor, she's going to point Stannis north. I like that. The implications of that are neat. And then even as we've you know, we've all been rooting for Rob, the King of the North, to triumph over the Lannisters. And the loss of the Stark family, the, you know, all the hopes for the North and the Starks are shattered. But then across the Narrow Sea, we see this triumphant moment for Daenerys. And you can see through Barristan and Jorah's eyes just how awestruck they are at the phenomenon that she's becoming. That, you know, she's got the love of this mass of people and this powerful army and these three, you know, impressive dragons. And that just harkens back to the legends, the fairy tales, the myths that they grew up with about how a Targaryen with three dragons came and conquered Westeros in the first place. And they must just be feeling this wave of destiny. And as a viewer, I think, you know, do you feel that, Phil? That
I'm sorry. All my emotions wrapped up in the Blackhawks playoff run.
Well, imagine that feeling, but with dragons.
Well, no, they beat the dragons in the quarterfinals.
You know, there's just so many little plot threads and politics and intrigue and so many characters wrapped up in their own interests and motivations. I like that by the end of the season, as it wraps up, you kind of, they put a sense of...
There's good shit
epic
coming for everybody.
Destiny. Yeah, exactly.
Is that enough for the TV viewers, you think? I don't know.
Can I chime in on that point?
You're a TV viewer. As is that, you haven't read the books.
Let Craig chime in.
No, okay. Like we've said a couple times about this episode, Melisandre reroutes Stannis' attention with a sentence or two, which seems awful fast. Stannis laughs it off, kind of like throws his hands in the air, is like, well, you're calling the shots, I guess. Davos, good job. You get to live because she says so. He's kind of acknowledging his own lack of a presence in the decision-making process. But it's law. She's his right-hand man now, and it's clear. Yara, or what's her name? What's her character's name in the show?
Asha/Yara,
same person. She suddenly is completely hell-bent on saving Theon after practically throwing him to the wolves earlier. There have been a few reroutes, and they weren't all season long. They were just this episode long. A lot of people, also the when they talk about who's going north and south of the wall, what way to get there, what's going on. I mean, there were a lot of 180-degree turns in the episode this time, and I feel like they could have, with as non-actiony or maybe as kind of sparse or vacant as some of the episodes have felt in the latter half of the season, I think they could have made those turns a little less sharp, maybe set each one of them up with one other episode or one other dialogue. Now it just really feels like, I mean, I know we're about to go into a new season and people expect change and difference and there'll be a different texture starting with the very first episode, but man, things are just really, really different. I mean, Stannis is, instead of being hell-bent on reclaiming the Iron Throne but getting nowhere, now he's going to be, it looks like, hell-bent on helping stop the invasion from the north and getting who knows where. I wonder if it wasn't supposed to be somewhat implied that he didn't have any luck with reclaiming the throne, so let's try something else. Can we have a victory? Can we get, you know, someone throw us a bone or something?
I think that the two most important quotes from this episode were when Sam is in Maester Aemon's chambers and says, "We didn't build a wall 700 feet high and
to keep men out."
And then when Melisandre says, "The war of the five kings for the Iron Throne means nothing.
It's irrelevant."
Right. All of that is just like, you know, everything that's happened thus far is just had insignificant in comparison to the power of the others.
But we were kind of left with that buildup, in the last season? And
right.
Now we're right back to there.
But
and
did they do it the justice that it deserves to make it so that the eyes of Westeros are turning north? I mean, we've seen a couple scenes. I know they're expensive scenes. Maybe that's why we haven't seen more. But was there enough? Did you feel enough threat, Phil, as a TV watcher, that all of Westeros should now, even, you know, people down as far south as Highgarden or Dorne should be like, Winter Walkers are coming. Like, we gotta...
Seemed like there was more of that in the previous seasons than there was this season.
I agree. Do you think that... Is your feeling as a TV watcher now that it's going to unify the Seven Kingdoms and there's going to be a big...
No way.
Okay. I was going to say a big, you know, north versus, or north of the wall versus south of the wall showdown. And
nope. There's no unification in Westeros.
Okay. It's interesting.
Just more scheming opportunities.
And plotting.
But I know people have been put off by the lack of action in this season. And the one action-filled, well, most or the biggest flash of action last week was action a lot of people didn't like.
Right. Yeah.
So... And then season finale, we're kind of left with more setup stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about other series that I've watched and thought about how a lot of times they save the huge, huge bang for the very last episode. Maybe the last 10, 15 minutes of the last episode. And this show is not like that at all. They always do something huge on episode 9, and then 10 is left for exposition and kind of catching your breath and the kind of thing. And that's, is that normal for a blockbuster show? I don't know.
It's not, but shows that are written for TV, you know, I don't think they really look, they don't often look beyond the current season.
Because, you know, they might not get, yeah.
Well, it's not even necessarily just, you know, we don't know if we'll be picked up next season. I think it's just more like, you know, they're making it up as they go along.
Yeah, they're not sure where they're going.
It's hard enough to kind of create a satisfying, overarching, you know, plot to let run through 13 or 26 episodes and then have kind of the story of the week, the A story and the B story.
But they have no source material.
That's right. If it's only because of the source material that this show has, you know, has stuff that is happening seasons down the road that they're aware of. Most TV shows have no idea what's going to happen next season.
Most TV shows don't have to touch on as much as, you know, this does.
Seriously.
Characters-wise and, you know, books to live up to.
I had another thought. I wonder if it's easier to have a huge episode 9 than a kind of expository episode 10 when the next season, say season 4 episode 1, they do the longer last season on Game of Thrones. I mean, if they went from huge blockbuster, battle-y, crazy shit flying everywhere, people getting stabbed, directly into some very peaceable episode 1 of season 4, which we can probably assume that season 1 episode 4 is going to be slower paced. Like, maybe they don't want to go from an absolute, like, crazy buildings on fire, people getting murdered episode or recap right into boring, kind of stale by comparison, everyday life, which they're going to do. I mean, they can go to these kind of setup scenes, you know, where Melisandre is talking about, you know, we got ice to the north, everybody, and Asha, Yara is going, well, I'm going to go save my brother. And, you know, instead of having the real super action-packed things, and then you go right into kind of stale everyday life that always happens the first episode of a new season. Maybe they don't want people to have to change up that quick, or they want it to be more smooth of a transition. Maybe not. Just a thought.
Listeners?
Listeners? My scene was too long.
Too expository. Needs more butt slaps. More action.
I feel like some of the characters, we've seen everything that they're going to accomplish from A Storm of Swords, the book, already. So even though, you know, we've been told that they're splitting that book up into two seasons, 3 and 4, I feel like we're kind of done with a lot of these characters.
I agree.
There's not a lot left. Well, I won't say who, but I mean, I think we all know there's action. Action is descending on Castle Black, right? There's going to be a wildling confrontation at Castle Black. We get a sense that Stannis is heading north. There's some momentum there. Things are just kind of grim in King's Landing at the moment, but we know that Joffrey's going to get married. We didn't see any Tyrells. I guess that's what I was trying to think of earlier.
No, so
what characters did we not touch base with in this last episode? But there's no reason to suspect that anything is going to happen with them other than Joffrey getting married and them kind of solidifying the Tyrell family influence in the kingdom. But now that Robb Stark is dead, Tywin can kind of... where is Tywin going to focus his energies? He's essentially bought the North by handing it over to Roose Bolton. That's pretty clear, right?
Mm-hmm.
They say all that thing about...
The Warden of the North.
Warden of the North now. Is Tywin going to clash with the Tyrells now, or are they still pretty well in bed together? Because in this wedding between Margaery and Joffrey will cement their union.
I mean, there's bad blood. They're pretty clear about the fact that it... I don't want to say not everybody's happy. I will almost say that nobody's happy fully about it.
But that worked fine for Robert and Cersei for 20 years, or however long, for 13 years?
I mean, did it work fine ever if what happened in the end happened? Do you know what I mean?
What happened in the end is a Lannister... Well, even though his name is Baratheon, will sit upon the Iron Throne and rule the Seven Kingdoms, as far as Tywin's concerned, even though he hates the little shit, and everyone else does. And
King doesn't, crown doesn't give you power, though.
Hey, does Stannis and Dragonstone have, is there any army? Is there anything?
Do they have anything? Hanging out all season.
They've got to have some guys.
Do they have a foot, a horse, a ship, anything?
That's why they need... Well, Davos to get all that back for them.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, they have nothing, right?
They don't have much.
They have leeches.
they have
shadow babies.
Do you recall from the books?
Well, I'm just asking in the
show, it hasn't been explained or established at all. We know that Salladhor Saan got fed up for not being paid and took off, right?
Right.
But we should have seen him.
I think that was supposed to convey the general sentiment, too. Like, everyone's like, fuck this shit, mm-hmm. You know.
Right.
What do you have to offer? Nothing.
And the book, when they send, well, not Gendry in the book, but the guy that Gendry takes the place of, I mean, Salladhor Saan helps him escape.
Edric Storm escape?
Yep.
I forgot about that.
It's not just, oh, get in this little boat and there you go.
Good luck.
Row off.
Learn to row.
They take him out to Salladhor Saan and then, you know, he takes him to safety. So he's a little more in the picture.
So the power of Dragonstone, Stannis, and Melisandre is in the black arts, correct?
Well, I don't know if this will ever come into play in the show, but he does still have the loyalty of the Florents, which is his wife's family. And so it's some small number of ships and knights associated with the Florents.
Which they haven't even alluded to in the show, have they?
No, but we did see his wife in one episode this season. Mm-hmm. And... I think we might have reason to expect to see her again later.
In a court hearing?
I'm going to make a prediction about the series. That they are going to slash a lot of material from A Feast for Crows. In particular, all the Dorne-centric chapters. I think, even though Dorne wasn't really introduced, there's one character from Dorne we would be meeting here pretty soon. He comes to Joffrey's wedding. This member of the Martell family, which rules Dorne, which is one of the Seven Kingdoms to the south. So that was kind of like a whole new thing, you know, kind of just like we were introduced to the Iron Islands last season, you know. Dorne is kind of the last of the major Seven Kingdoms that has a whole... It just introduces a whole new cast of characters and a whole new set of intrigues and stuff. I'm going to predict that they're going to just drop all of that and just skip it. Just not have it come into play at all. They're not going to waste a season of the HBO series introducing a whole new cast of characters that nobody cares about.
Well, they've got room now.
Yeah. Unless Martin intends to... write more Dorne-centric books. Like, you know, this guy has to have a shift in from character sets from people he's killed off to new... There has to be an influx of new blood in some ways because you have to have new heroes and new villains. And
well, you do, unless you are starting... If you are the show runners, you might start looking for ways to wrap it up. And I've read it several times now that their initial enthusiasm, like the kind of the finish line that they were, not finish line, but the Red Wedding has been kind of like the thing that they wanted to get to, that they were most excited about. Just being able to tell the story up to that point was what was driving them. And I think that, especially the way that things kind of lose focus in the books for a while, you know, just kind of watering down, dragging out, I think the show is going to take an opportunity to tighten it up, skip, you know.
They might have to save viewership, possibly.
I think
You said to wrap it up, but can we agree that if this show goes to its conclusion, that there could be 9 seasons of Game of Thrones?
I don't think that could happen on HBO, do you? Has anything run that long? Entourage, maybe?
But they've never had a pre-written set of...
There's no way.
This voluminous. I mean, it's huge.
I'm starting to feel like the show's going to get to the end point before Martin's ever written it, and I don't know how that's going to play out.
Do you think that some people that he's collaborating with on the show might actually have an influence on what he ends up writing in the book? I bet it could happen.
I don't... you know what? It's entirely possible. I feel like he is maybe... I hate to be one of those sort of naggy fans that's just kind of like, hurry, you know, stop fucking around and write this book because I want to read it. But I think that this show does introduce a sense of urgency, and that maybe that's the kick in the pants that he needs to get his shit together and get these books done, because he's got to stay ahead of the show. And I think he knows that it's a problem.
You poo-pooed my thought that might happen last season. You implied that I was being a fool.
Well, I've come around to your way of poo-pooing.
Would you say you pity the fool?
I have 2 anecdotal things to say real quick.
Okay.
Do you have more? Go on. Say something show related.
Well, I was just trying to think of some other Rocky quote to counter that one, but I opted not to.
Give him a...
Does I pity the fool count as a Rocky quote, or is that just pretty much wholly owned subsidiary of Mr. T?
Give him a, yo, Adrian.
I must break you.
It's not really a context, though. Unless you intend to break Phil. I don't know.
Well, if it dies, it dies.
My friend Kelly Dearson, Clint's wife, my friend's wife, now also my friend, Clint said Kelly was just like, she didn't bat an eyelash when at the Red Wedding because she hated Rob's storyline. She thought he was an unimportant character and it was just slogging through the whole thing, and it was boring, and she kind of hated everything that had to do with championing the North after Ned Stark died. And I guess he said that after the whole thing happened, she was just like, good, which was the only person I ever heard with anything close to that sort of reaction to it, which I kind of makes me love her, you know.
But, well, that makes me worry that the show didn't accurately convey, you know... It didn't make you invested in those characters the books did.
Some people always choose to invest in certain characters.
It's just her.
It's just her.
It's just her. It's just you, Kelly. You listen.
She's cold.
She's cold, man.
Well, who's she rooting for?
I'll ask her.
Joffrey.
Oh, Kelly.
Aren't we all?
And the
other. Well, she probably wants to see Sansa eat Robb Stark's head.
And the other one is, I went to breakfast this morning, sat down, went to Lisa's Radio Cafe, a local cafe, sat in the green room, which is the waiting room, sat down and was waiting to go get food, and a guy and a girl came in and sat down next to me, and they were talking to each other about, you know, Game of Thrones. I was like, you know, pricked my ears up, and she was just saying something about it, about last week's episode, and I just couldn't help myself, and I was just like, sorry to interrupt you, but how about that episode? God, wasn't that awesome? And I looked at the person, and she looked at me, and it was Molly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hey, okay.
Podcaster from season one. Here, Chuck, one of the people that kicked this off with Chuck. And I've never met her, but I recognize her from a successful Facebook stalk.
Did you guys have a good Game of Thrones-centric chat?
Yeah, a couple minutes, and we talked about she said say hi.
Cool. I saw her Friday, so.
Right on. So, you know. Not that big of a town, not that big of a world.
It's no Westeros.
Well, any parting thoughts from Molly to close out our season?
How would I know?
She might have told you this morning over breakfast.
Parting Molly?
I didn't have breakfast with her.
Near her?
Nope.
She was over her breakfast as she was meeting you for the first time?
No.
No.
We were both in a waiting room to go into the restaurant. Well, that has ruined everything.
You cut it out.
All right. Well, forget that. She had nothing to contribute.
Well, not that either.
See you guys in a year.
All right. Any parting thoughts?
Parting shots.
Parting shots.
I'd like to thank God. Thank, you know.
Your agent?
Thank my agent.
The Academy?
Thank my mom. My dad.
Thank the Blackhawks.
This is the most thankful
cue music
in a row I've ever heard Phil be about anything. So let's just take this. Okay. Listeners, take it.
I'm done. No, I want to thank the listeners.
Oh, the listeners.
Plural.
We have got a lot of special surprises in store for you listeners next season. So
we might have a couple this summer. We can end on a...
Are we going to do the new Superman movie, maybe?
I'm down.
IMAX 3D, Chuck.
Very well.
Stanley Cup Finals podcast.
In game, as it's happening.
Play by play.
Season... Well, what season is this of hockey?
Well, it's an original six matchup, so it's quite a few seasons.
Season quite a few.
Season 83, playoff game one.
I might miss that one. All right, well, we might be back with some summer treats, or you might not hear from us for nigh on 10 and a half
42
months.
Weeks.
42 weeks.
Or ever.
Or ever. That's true.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.